deep left center by McLean. He crushes a three-run homer.
Yeah, that wasn't a Royals player either, folks. Hey, welcome to Sports Ticket. Wade Gershon with you. Dusty has the morning off as the Royals continue their losing ways. But before we get to that, there is some big news in regards to state basketball sites for next season. The Kansas State High School Activity Association announced the host sites for the 2024 state basketball tournaments. Manhattan already announced they would not be able to host the 2A state tournament due to Kansas State wanting to host home games in the final week of the Big 12 conference season, so a new venue was added. The Colby Event Center, we get to go there every single year covering Beloit Trojan basketball, brand new facility just a couple years old, will be the new venue among the state basketball sites. And the Colby Event Center will host the 1A Division I state tournament in March of 2024. Dodge City will now host the 2A state tournament, which is usually in Manhattan. And then 3A remains in Hutchinson. 1A Division II will stay in Great Bend. 4A will stay in Salina. 5A will stay in Emporia. And 6A will be at Wichita. For more info on the host sites for state basketball, you can read our story at ncksports.com. The U.S. Open is underway today. Just got started about 30 minutes ago. So just a few golfers that have played a hole or two thus far. So we'll continue to follow that throughout tomorrow and, of course, into the weekend. And we'll talk about it on Monday. Brooks Koepka coming off the major recently and would like to add another one to his repertoire. Rory McIlroy, of course, and many other noteworthy golfers competing in L.A. for the U.S. Open. Before we talk some Royals baseball, how about some basketball? We are 148 days away from college basketball, and Bill Self was asked yesterday about the new piece of the puzzle, Hunter Dickinson. How is he getting along, and how is he getting acclimated to what KU wants to do offensively?
I would say been very, very seamless and easy adjustment and easy transition, but he's not used to playing the way that we'll play. So it's probably the activity level is probably going to be a little different than what he has been accustomed to, because when you're designed to be the center point of everything, and you know, let's slow it down and make sure he gets a touch. You know, we're gonna make sure he gets a touch as long as he can play at the pace we want him to play at. So he's got some things he's got to work on, but yeah, he can score.
Yeah, Hunter Dickinson can absolutely score, but as Coach Self is saying, listen, we're not building everything around him. We've got some good players already here. DeJuan Harris, Kevin McCullough coming back, KJ Adams. And so Hunter Dickinson is a nice piece to the puzzle, no doubt. And he can score, but it doesn't sound like they're going to slow down the offense, slow down the pace just so he can keep up. So he's going to have to get in shape to where he can. Not saying he's in bad shape, it's just that it's a different pace of play, what KU does compared to Michigan. So Hunter Dickinson, be interested to see how he plays for KU. A lot is expected out of him. Patrick Mahomes is going to star on Netflix. It's called Quarterback. This past season, there were cameras going around and following Patrick Mahomes, Kirk Cousins, and Marcus Mariota. Mariota lost his job as starting quarterback late in the season in Atlanta. Kirk Cousins, of course, quarterback of the Vikings. And then I think people know by now who Mahomes is. Okay. So it looks very interesting. They released a tease or a trailer for this documentary called Quarterback yesterday on social media. And you remember the play where he spun around on the sideline and then threw a touchdown pass against Tampa Bay on Sunday Night Football. And he was mic'd up for that game, and it's like the end of the trailer, and I've retweeted it. You can go and follow me on Twitter, NCKS Radio Guy 10. He says, yeah, I'm like that. So all the greats have a swagger, and Patrick Mahomes has a swagger. Max Crosby, defensive end for the Las Vegas Raiders, was talking the other day on a podcast with Von Miller that, you know, Mahomes is a tremendous competitor and he doesn't back down. And Crosby had sacked him and did this and that and whatever in a game in Kansas City last year. And the Chiefs had to rally and win that game. If you remember correctly, the Chiefs were down big and came back. And Crosby sacked him a couple times, and then Mahomes did something good, and he said, I'm here. I'm here all day. So you got to have some swag. The greats all have some kind of swag or amazing quiet confidence, and it'll be very interesting to see that series called Quarterback on Netflix coming July the 12th. All right, we'll spend the rest of the show talking about the Kansas City Royals, and I know that doesn't probably excite some people, but let's talk about where they are now and what may have to happen for them to improve, okay? So last night, the Royals lose to the Cincinnati Reds at the K. 7-4 is the final. Reds scored 6 of their 7 runs on 4 home runs. You heard the shot by one of the Reds players. The Royals out-hit the Reds 15-7. They left 14 men on base. They were 2-for-15 with runners in scoring position, which is atrocious. They were 4-for-34 with runners in scoring position in the series. They are on a record-setting pace, and it's not a good one, of a worse batting average with runners in scoring position. Oh, by the way, the Reds made 4 errors last night, and it didn't even matter. The Royals are so bad, the other team can commit 4 errors, and they're not even a great team. The Reds are under 500. The Royals are so bad that the Reds made 4 errors and still beat the Royals by 3 in Kansas City. Bobby Witt Jr. had 3 hits on his 23rd birthday. Edward Olivares had 4 hits. Daniel Lynch went 7 innings, 7 hits, 7 runs, 4 homers. Manager Matt Cotrero, the rookie manager for the Royals, on the struggles with runners in scoring position.
Are there guys that are probably trying to hit a 3-run homer at times? Yes. But other times, I think, you know, we've put some good at-bats together and didn't have a lot to show for it, you know, not just tonight, but over the course of this streak. Do I think the guys are feeling the fact that we've lost 9 in a row? Yeah. But I don't think it just manifests itself only when there's guys in scoring position.
So, if you think things can't get worse, the Royals say, hold my beer. Along with losing their last 9, they have a 9-game losing streak, third straight sweep, the Royals have now lost 12 of their last 13. They are 18-50 on the season. Worst start in franchise history. Here's one for you. Over the course of the last 67 games, which is all the games this year so far for the Royals, 18-49 prior to the loss last night. Do you know what the Chiefs' record is in their last 67 games? The Kansas City Chiefs' record? 55-12. Oh, man. But if you thought it couldn't get any worse, it actually can. Because the Royals announced yesterday that one of their really good young hitters, Vinny Pascatino, will miss the rest of this season. Pascatino, or Pasquatch, as they call him, aggravated an injury during Friday's game with the Orioles, and it was found to be a torn labrum in his right shoulder. He'll undergo surgery to have it repaired. He's done this year, hit .247, 9 home runs, 26 RBIs, and 61 games with the Royals. Club expects him to be ready by spring training in 2024. So then, there's a little video thrown out there saying, okay, what are the Royals going to do without Vinny Pascatino playing at first? Which, you got Nick Prado, so you're okay there. But Matt Def, you could play first. And they showed Salvador Perez taking some ground balls at first. Well, then Salvador Perez last night left the game in the third inning after getting hit by a pitch on his right hand. He has a contusion. He's listed as day-to-day, so luckily nothing broken. The Royals have today off before starting a 3-game series with the Angels tomorrow in Kansas City. They get a face. I don't know if Otani's going to pitch in the series, but Otani and Mike Trout in the lineup, they'll have to face them. So the thing I want to talk about with the Royals is, where are they going? Because as somebody pointed out on social media yesterday, name one pitcher that you feel good about. Only one. Like, you need 5 starters, you need a bullpen. You know, you can piece together a bullpen with failed starters and maybe get some bargain bin basement deals during the offseason. But you got to find 5 starters, and actually you need to find about 7 or 8, because a starting rotation of 5, they don't make it through the season unscathed. Somebody goes on the injured list at some point. So what pitcher is a part of the future? Brad Keller's on the injured list right now. I don't think he probably is. Zach Greinke's not part of the future, no matter how much we love him. Jordan Lyles is signed this year and next year. He's not part of the future. He's 0-11, ERA almost 7. And the Royals are 0-14 in his starts. That's got to be some kind of record, or going to be eventually. So there's three pitchers that were in the rotation to start the year. They're not part of the future. Brady Singer and Daniel Lynch are the only two you can come up with. Maybe you could say Chris Bubich, who had Tommy John surgery. Jackson Kowar doesn't seem to be a guy that's going to work out. Asa Lacy, who they drafted high a few years back, is a mess and hasn't done anything in the minors. And then their best minor league pitcher, at least lower level ball, Frank Mezzucato, he ran into another Royals play during fly ball practice or something, and he's out for a month. That's how bad it is. The Royals' best pitcher in the minors wasn't even pitching and got hurt, and he's out for a month. And I saw Randy Jazirli point out on social media yesterday, and I want to pull this up because I retweeted it, and he said, I just want to say to whichever one of you made a deal with the devil in July of 2014 that gave us the 2014-2015 Royals back-to-back World Series appearances and a World Championship in exchange for the last eight seasons and counting of misery, good work. It was all worth it. And I remember when we were talking about this on our show, when the Royals won the World Series in 2015, first of all, they weren't expected to go to the World Series in 14. They had been bad pretty much almost every year from 1986 after they won the World Series in 85. Really bad, 86 all the way up to 2013. 2013, they started to turn things around. 14, of course, they got hot in the second half of the season, made it to the playoffs, swept, won the wild card, swept the first two series, and then ran into the Giants and Madison Bumgarner, lost in seven. Then in 2015, they had the best record in the American League, caught a few breaks in the playoffs, end up winning the whole thing. From the span of 1986 to 2013, the Royals, 2003, they started the year, 9-0, and they were had a first-place lead by seven games at the break. And then everybody, I think, kind of knew they couldn't keep it going. They had guys like Jose Lemer from the Independent League, and the odds were against the Royals they were going to hold on to that. They were overachieving, to say the least, under Tony Peña, who all kept saying, believe, believe, and he believed so much that he quit early in the 2004 season after the Royals signed Benito Santiago and Juan Gonzalez, and that, of course, didn't work out too well. The other time the Royals were good between 1986 or between 1985, after they won the World Series, and 2013, when they had a winning record prior to making the World Series back-to-back years, was 1994, when they were 3.5 games out of first, and Hal McRae was the manager, and Royals had won like 14 in a row right before that, and the season was called because of the strike, and the season was over. That's only 2 years I remember the Royals being good, between 1985 and 2014, between their World Series appearance when they won it all in 85 and in 14 when they lost to the Giants. And so we talked about on our show, after the Royals won this World Series in 2015, I looked at the A's. The A's have had a lot of really pretty good teams since they won World Series with the Bash Brothers, but they haven't won a World Series since. The Minnesota Twins had won many division titles and always seem to lose to the Yankees in the playoffs. They have no World Series to show for it and what they've done since Kirby Puckett days. So, because the Twins did win a World Series of Kirby Puckett, who was a great, great player, and Kurt Herbeck and Jack Morris and others. Remember that. But we talked about it. Would you rather be a fan of a team that's in the playoffs virtually every year, but they never win a championship? Or would you rather be a fan of a franchise that has a short window, goes to the playoffs a couple times, and wins it all, or at least wins it once? Maybe it's a fluky year where they just get lucky, and they're horrible every year before that and after that. What would you choose? And my answer was, I will choose misery in exchange for a world championship. And I had some people disagree with me. They're like, well, yeah, but think of all the great times you'd have when you're winning year in and year out. I said, true. But I said, you know what? The Kansas City Chiefs were like that. And the Royals didn't break my heart until 2014. They didn't break my heart. I knew they stunk. So it's like, whatever. The Chiefs, found a way to blow a lead in Indianapolis in a playoff game, found a way to never force the other team to punt in a home playoff game, found a way to have the wrong quarterback starting a playoff game. They had a kicker that was horrible, had missed extra points during the season, didn't address it. There was, had a lead at 21-0 lead. Alex Smith in against the Titans couldn't score in the second half. There's all kinds of crazy bad things that happened to the Chiefs in the playoffs. And you felt like they're cursed. And you could say, well, you know, at least they were there. They had a chance. And I never really truly thought the Chiefs were going to make the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, until they got Patrick Mahomes. And even then, I wasn't sure of it until the way he played his first year. And when he played like he did first year MVP, I'm like, well, the Chiefs are going to win. They're going to win a Super Bowl or two. And they've won two. Now, if the Chiefs were horrible for 20-some years and then won a couple Super Bowls and horrible again, I'm cool with it. I could live with it. And I'll tell you why. Because the Royals were bad from 1986 to 2013. 13 is when they started turning around. 2014, I went to games in the playoffs. It was crazy, and they lost in Game 7. I was there for the heartache. I was speechless. I was like, this is not supposed to happen. This has been a great run. One guy single-handedly almost beat us, and that was Madison Bumgarner. And I was like, there's no way the Royals are going to make it back ever again to the World Series. That was the last time I'm going to see it in my lifetime. I didn't have any expectations the next year other than I was hoping they'd be good again. But I figured, you know, they'll probably be good, but they're not going to make the World Series. This was their shot, and they didn't get it done. But yet it's been a great year because nobody really expected the Royals to make it to the World Series that year. They're a wild card team that year. So 2015, they have a great record. And, you know, they're doing about what I thought they were going to do from the standpoint of they're down 2-1 against the Houston Astros. They're down 6-2 in game 4 in Houston, and I'm like, here we go. This is what I said all along. The odds are against them. You're not going to get back to the World Series back-to-back years. It just doesn't happen a lot unless you're, you know, the Yankees used to be able to do it. Maybe the Red Sox have done it. The Dodgers have done it. But a small market team is not going back-to-back. The Rangers did it and lost both World Series and went back-to-back. I wouldn't really call them a small market team. So I was like, it ain't going to happen. I mean, I'm excited. And I wanted the Royals to win so bad. There were more expectations in 15, but I thought the odds were against them. And they defied the odds. They caught a few breaks. The weird ground ball up the middle that could have been a double play. Morales hit. Correa couldn't handle. And next thing you know, it opened up the floodgates. And the Royals come back to beat the Astros game 4, win game 5 behind Johnny Cueto. They win the ALCS. And they win the World Series against the Mets. And 2016, I think we were talking about on the show, when it was a trade deadline. And the Royals clearly weren't the same team. And the Royals basically gave a lot of guys contracts or gave them money. It was almost like the feel-good parade tour where you get a car, you get a car, you get your money, you get your money. And you could kind of see where this was going. You know, they re-signed Alex Gordon instead of re-signing Ben Zobrist. We said at the time that was a mistake. I still stand by that. Zobrist went on to win a World Series with the Cubs and was an outstanding player for the Cubs that year. In fact, he might have even been World Series MVP. I don't remember. Have to look that up. But you could tell it was the beginning of the end. It was like, hey, it was a great run. 2013, good season. 2014, we surprised everybody. 2015, we were the best team in baseball. We finished it. That was good enough for me. And I said on this very show, listen, if the Royals are bad for the next 10 years, I can live with it. I can live with it. Because here's why. No one can take away the memories I have of a world championship in 2015. No one can take away the moments of winning the pennant and being at Kauffman Stadium with my son, who was 9 at the time, watching Wade Davis get out of a bases loaded jam to win the pennant in game 6 against the Blue Jays. Nobody can take away that I was able to be there and see an inside the park home run to start game 1 of the World Series with Alcides Escobar against Matt Harvey. And nobody can take away the fact I was able to have that memory of Alex Gordon hitting a home run in the bottom of the ninth to tie game 1 and eventually win in extra innings. And of course, they go on to win the World Series. I'm sure Twins fans and A's fans the last, you know, whatever it is, 15, 20 years, when they were winning division titles or making a playoffs on a regular basis but never really could crack through or get to the World Series. I don't think either one actually did. I'm sure they have memories, and I'm sure they're nice, fine memories. But I guarantee you, they would rather have a chance. I think they'd rather have a championship, don't you? I know as a Chiefs fan, championships are a heck of a lot better than just getting there. But if you told me you have your choice of not getting there very often, but when you do, you're going to win it all, compared to you're going to get there a ton, but you're never going to win it all, I will take the championship every single bleeping time. So here we are. You're not going to hear me complain as much as some people about the Royals being bad. Because the small market team, small market teams have their windows. The Royals had their window, and they took full advantage of that window. Unlike the Twins and the A's and the Rangers and others. The Royals took full advantage of their window. They won a title. They traded for Johnny Cueto. They traded for Ben Zobrist. They went all in, and it worked. Now, had it not, those would have been bad trades. But it worked. As we said when the trades were made, these are good trades or great trades if you win the title. If you don't win the title, anything short of winning a World Series in 2015, these are going to come back and haunt the Royals. It depleted part of their minor league system, although a lot of these pitchers that they traded away didn't really turn into great stars. Sean Manaea was a good pitcher. Brandon Finnegan disappeared after looking good in the playoffs for the Royals in 14. So, but the Royals won it all. Now, if you're an 8-year-old and you're a big Royals fan, you don't remember 2015. So, you're like, this stinks, and I get it. But if you're my age, or if you're in your, you know, if you're in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, your 70s, your 80s, your 90s, maybe Randy Jazzerli is right. We made a deal with the devil in July of 2014. Or we made a deal with the devil when we made the trades in 15 to get Zobrist and Cueto and win this whole thing. And it paid out handsomely, didn't it? I mean, we played the roulette table and we hit. We took a hit with 17 and got a 4 and got blackjack. It worked out. And so I'm not going to freak out about the Royals being so god awful this year. Because I've already dealt with the Royals being god awful for 29 years of my life. We're just back to where we were. I know it's disappointing and frustrating from the standpoint of, man, you see how electric this town was when the Royals were winning? I remember on this show back in 2010, 2011, I said, Kansas City's a baseball town. And I had some people tell me I was wrong. I said, trust me, when the Royals get good again, or if they get good again, you will see. And guess what? We saw, didn't we? We saw. Now, Kansas City is owned by the Chiefs now. How could you not be? The Chiefs have won 55 of the last 67 games. 3 Super Bowl appearances in 5 years. They have the face of the league. They've got 2 Super Bowls in the last 5 years. 3 Super Bowl appearances. 5 straight AFC title games. I mean, they own the city. But there is room for the Royals and the Chiefs to be good at the same time. It can happen. And a lot of times over my lifetime, when the Royals did have that little blip of being good, that's when the Chiefs stunk. Or had a horrible disappointment at the end. So Randy Jazzerli says, you know what? It was all worth it. If you believe we made a deal with the devil to be good in 14 and 15, and now we're paying the price, this is what the deal was. Now, I will say, you don't think the Royals are going to be so bad. Like, you would like to see progress, right? Like, if the Royals are 8 years removed from winning World Series in 15, clearly you had to have a rebuild or two in the last 8 years. But here's where I want to get. This is the really disappointing thing about this. A whole bunch of other small market teams have been bad, really bad. The Baltimore Orioles, the Pirates are having a good year. They've been bad for a while. You know, we've seen the A's be bad and then good. We've seen the Astros be horrible and get good. We see a lot of teams that were really bad, but they were bad for a few years, and you could see the plan, and they were rebuilding, and then all of a sudden they make the playoffs or even win a World Series. As a Royals fan right now, what gives you hope? What makes you feel that the Royals are not that far away. And if there's anybody out there that thinks the Royals aren't that far away, I really, really want them to be my best friend, because you are the most optimistic person that I've ever perhaps met, if you think they're not that far away. Brady Singer might, and I stress might, be a piece of the puzzle in the future. Last year was Royals Pitcher of the Year. Fantastic. This year, ERA over 6. He has not been good. Daniel Lynch was supposed to be one of those outstanding draft picks, college pitchers, and he has good stuff, but he's just not consistent enough. And maybe he's a part of the future. And that's it. There's nobody else on the Royals pitching staff that you can say without a shadow of a doubt, oh yeah, that's a guy we can build around in the next few years while we suffer through this rebuild again. What everyday players do you believe are going to be a member of this team when the Royals are competing for the playoffs, to get to the playoffs? Well, in order to answer that question, you have to answer another question first. When do you think the Royals will be contenders again? Well, it sure as hell isn't 2023. I don't think there's any way it's 2024. Is it 2025? I don't know. Maybe 2026. So if you believe it's 2025, 2026, or even 2027, the next time the Royals are going to be where they need to be to be close to the playoffs, right? Maybe close to winning a division title. And by the way, the division is horrible this year, and the Royals are blowing that opportunity. And I'm all for getting rid of the older veterans that aren't going to be a part of the future. Hunter Dozier was terminated. Well, not officially, yeah, not technically terminated, but his contract was terminated, blah, blah, blah. They released him, designated for assignment. Jackie Bradley's now gone. And that leads us to the captain of the team, the senior citizen of the team, as you could say. And that's Salvador Perez. And before I talk about Salvador Perez for a moment, let's talk about the Royals and their position players. Is Salvador Perez part of the future of the Royals 3 years from now, if that's when you think they're going to be good? Is he going to be a viable part of this organization at that time? I don't know if his body's going to hold up. Is Vinny Pascatino the answer at first base or DH? I think a lot of people believe he is going to do one of those two things 3 years from now. Okay, so maybe there's one answer. Nick Prado, the jury's still out. You're hoping that he's going to be the first baseman and Pascatino be your DH. That would be ideal situation 3 years from now. Is Michael Massey the answer at second base? I do not know. Bobby Witt Jr., that's the guy you sit here and go, well, you build your team around this guy. Well, this is his second full year of service, and if the Royals aren't good until 3 years from now, now all of a sudden you're thinking about trading the guy because you can't sign him to a long-term deal, and that's if he performs up to what people want him to do. Mikael Garcia, is he your future third baseman? Is Drew Waters the answer in center field? We've only seen a small sample size. I mean, where are the answers? What players on this team right now do you say, you know what, these are the guys. We got a young core, and they're young. So maybe they just got to go through these horrible growing pains, and then you find some pitching, and they're going to take off. It's possible. And I would rather see the young guys suffer and play through all this, of course, assuming they don't fall apart confidence-wise, because they're getting this experience. But here's the thing. A lot of people are like, well, there's no help on the horizon in the minors right now that we can really see. Well, that's because all the Royals' top prospects are here now. And the Royals are playing them every day, which I say is okay. So if the plan is to get all these guys experience, that's great. You can argue, though, that the service time starts early, to where if you're not going to be good for 3 years, you're wasting service time with these young players. And then when they're good, you're not going to be able to re-sign them. And so thus the vicious cycle continues, doesn't it? The vicious cycle continues. Well, we trade all our best players to the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers or the Padres, whoever the great team is. So when you're a small market team, it is more difficult. But there are other small market teams that have done way better than the Royals since 2015. So that's not, you shouldn't be using that as an excuse. You can't use injuries as an excuse. I mean, Brady Singer's pitching now. Daniel Lynch is pitching. Scott Barlow's been the closer. Aroldis Chapman has been pitching. The Royals, they haven't had any serious injury except until now of Vinny Pascatino. All their young guys are here. There are other potential prospects. Yes. Do you know that in the prospect top 100 list in Major League Baseball, the Royals don't have a single one? Which means that the guys they have at the big league level, they're going to have to be the answers. Because John Sherman and the Royals ownership group ain't going to go out and sign Aaron Judge to a free agent deal. And here's the last question that ties into Salvador Perez. What do the Royals think of MJ Melendez? He's playing right field. And here's what I mean by that question. Do the Royals believe that MJ Melendez is their catcher of the future? Because if he is, then what are we doing here? You suck. You're 18-50. You're god-awful. Salvador Perez isn't helping you win games. I know he hit a homer tonight to tie the game. Guess what? Still lost. We've said this way before the people in Kansas City have been suddenly jumping on this because some person threw it out in a rumor mill a week or two ago about Salvador Perez, that somebody had called the Royals asking about Salvador Perez's availability in a trade. We were way ahead of the curve on this one. The Royals always tend to trade guys too late. They wait too long. Dayton Moore did it all the time. J.J. Piccolo may be doing it now. Now, you have to have a trading partner. And you want to get a good return in a trade. What is the market for a 33-year-old catcher who's declining defensively? Who has had a lot of wear and tear on his body? He doesn't run very well. He hardly ever walks. And he has a big contract. His annual average salary is $20.5 million. The time to trade Salvador Perez probably has passed. If you want something really good in return. Salvador Perez is 33. His salary is $20 million this year, $20 million next year. And when he's 35, the Royals are on the hook for $22 million. When he's 35. So if somebody is willing to trade for Salvador Perez and give you something that you think is really worth it, then the Royals should not balk at that. They should do it. Now, Salvador Perez he's been with the team long enough that he has a no-trade clause. He can exercise it, or he can say yay to this or nay to that. Salvador Perez wants to be a Royal his whole career, and I think that's admirable. And I would love to see Salvador Perez be a Royal his entire career. Absolutely would love it. At the same time, I would also love for the Royals to be good again. And I don't think the Royals are going to be anywhere close to good again with Salvador Perez on this team. And that's not a knock on Salvador Perez. That's not his fault. He didn't construct this team. He didn't build this team. The question really is going to be, one, are the Royals willing to trade Salvador Perez? Which they should be. Two, is Salvi willing to go to another team and not retire as a Royal? And the answer to that question would probably pertain to, does Salvi really, really want to win again? Does Salvi really want another chance to play in October and he wants to get another ring? And if the answer to those questions is yes, and Salvador Perez should then tell the Royals, I hate to leave, but I want to win. It's kind of like Zach Greinke back in 09. The Royals would have loved to have kept him, but Greinke's like, dude, I just don't see it happening here. Now, he ended up being wrong, didn't he? But the Royals trade Zach Greinke for some outstanding pieces. Now, I don't think you're going to get nearly as much for Salvador Perez in a trade when he's 33 and $20 million on the contract per year. But if the Royals say, yes, we are open to trading Salvador Perez, and Salvador Perez is willing to go to another team And he can say yay or nay to the, he can nix it with his no trade clause or the 10-5 rule. So he ain't going to go to a bad team, obviously. That makes no sense. Then that would open the door for MJ Melendez to be the Royals catcher every day. But I don't know if the Royals are sold on MJ Melendez being their catcher every day, and that might be part of the reason why they are holding on to Salvador Perez. And if the Royals are not sold on MJ Melendez being their everyday catcher and the future catcher of this organization, then who the heck is? See, we got all kinds of problems with the Royals right now. You've got a catcher that's blocking the way for Melendez to play catcher, but maybe not. Maybe the Royals don't think Melendez is suited to be a catcher. He's going to be a right fielder for the rest of his career. So then you've got an older, aging veteran behind the plate who got hit on the hand last night and is going to have to sit out some time. We think Fermin is the future at catcher? I mean, well, who's the future catcher for this organization? If it's not MJ Melendez, then the Royals are in deeper problems than I thought. So, Salvi is in a 4-year, $82 million contract. This is year two. You're J.J. Piccolo. You're the general manager of the Kansas City Royals. What do you do? To me, if you believe MJ Melendez is the future catcher, or you believe he can be, then you take the best deal for Salvador Perez. You get the money off your books. That saves you even more money. It maybe speeds up the process of turning around this franchise. And to me, the only reason not to trade Salvador Perez that makes any sense is that you don't think MJ Melendez is the catcher of the future and you don't have anybody ready right now. I think, and I think this is a gigantic mistake, and it's what got Dayton Moore in trouble. It what got Dayton Moore in trouble by signing Alex Gordon to a big deal. That was a major mistake. It got Dayton Moore in trouble re-signing Chris Young, giving money to all kinds of people because we had this great run and didn't trade guys when their value was at their highest. Whit Merrifield's another example of a guy that the Royals should have traded sooner. And I love Whit Merrifield. But the Royals weren't winning with him. You know, what's the point of having a great closer on your baseball team if you're a horrible team? What's the point? What, to win 68 games? Trade your closer and get somebody to help you win more than 68 games. You don't just trade the trade. You've got to get the pieces you want. I get that, okay? But I believe the Royals are doing the same thing they've done before. And I could be proven wrong. And if so, I will be happy to be proven wrong. And I think the Royals aren't reading things correctly if this is the way they think. We can't trade Salvi. He's so loved by our fans. He's so lovable. He does the Salvi splash. People come out to watch Salvi play. No, they don't. I don't go to a Royals game to watch Salvador Perez play. I did when he was hitting 48 homers a few years ago. Because that was the only reason to go watch the Royals, because they stunk then, was because Salvi was trying to break the Royals' all-time single-season home run record. Maybe you could get to 50. That was the reason to watch Salvi. But now it's not. If the Royals believe that their fan base is showing up to watch games right now only because of Salvador Perez, they are sadly sorely mistaken. Salvador Perez is not that fun to watch. Runners are stealing at a higher clip than ever before against him. Now, maybe part of that's pitchers not holding runners on, okay? And also the new rules, I get it. You know, the bigger bases, you can only two pickoffs. So that might be part of that. That's possible. I'm willing to admit that. Salvador Perez can't. You don't go watch him to steal bases. He's not throwing out guys like he used to. So what's the reason you go? If you are going to Royals game to watch Salvi. Salvi's the reason you're paying to go to a game at the K. What are you really going there to watch that Salvi does? Hit a home run? We've seen lots of home runs. Watch him grab a Gatorade bucket and empty it on a player? Listen, if that's the reason we're holding on to Salvador Perez, because he does the Salvi splash and he hits some home runs that many times don't, that haven't been that meaningful this year because the Royals are 18-50, you're holding on to him for all the wrong reasons. And I love Salvi. And he's the last linchpin to the 14-15 teams. And I think that's another reason why the Royals are probably hesitant to trade Salvi. They're worried. The Royals organization, I believe, is worried about backlash if they trade Salvador Perez. And yeah, there'll be some. And all these Royals fans that aren't going to games and don't watch them on TV and don't listen to them on the radio will jump out of the closets. Oh, my God, Salvi's been traded. I hate the Royals. That's it. I'm done with this team. They'll be on social media. That's it. That's the last straw. And you know what? They already gave up on the Royals. They weren't true fans in the first place. So the Royals, if they are holding on to Salvador Perez because of those reasons I just gave, this organization is in gigantic trouble. And the organization wants a brand new baseball park. They don't even have a real clear plan as to where they're going to have it. Talked to somebody last night. It says, why in the world would taxpayers vote to help pay for a stadium when they're so bad? I said, that's a good point. I said, do keep in mind, this is not just a stadium. It's going to be an entertainment district. It's proposed, what, $2.1 billion project? It'll be an entertainment place. There'll be concerts, and they got it in Milwaukee with the Bucks. There's tons of restaurants and bars. There's nothing to do right now outside of Kauffman Stadium except tailgate. Denny's burned down. Not that that was a reason to go. Taco Bell's across the street. There's Adams Mark, Coco Key Resort within Adams Mark, and there's a gas station. That's it! There's nothing around the stadium to do. So if the team stinks, there's no reason for you to go out to the game unless you want to watch Salvi hit a home run. Bobby Witt Jr. is the reason why I would watch. You know why I'm going to a game tomorrow night? To watch the other team star players. I'm going because I want to see Ohtani and Trout. I'm not going to watch the Royals tomorrow night. I'll cheer for them. I hope they win. But I'm not watching them. I'm not watching them because of Salvador Perez. I'm not watching them because of Bobby Witt Jr. now. He's not having a great year. Nobody is. I'm going to enjoy a baseball game because I do love the stadium. I love the waterfalls. I think it's beautiful. And I don't need a whole bunch of entertainment around me at a ballpark because I'm into the game, but a lot of fans do. So if you have a really bad team, you build a new stadium, even if your attendance isn't great, you're going to get more people at a brand new stadium because, one, there's a honeymoon period. You want to check out all the nuances of a new stadium. That'll be fun. Yay. But also, you're going to have stuff to do around this new stadium. It's going to be a big entertainment district. That is the proposal that is out there. The Texas Rangers have done it. I've been at their new ballpark. The Atlanta Braves have done it. I've been at their ballpark. The Milwaukee Bucks have done it downtown in Milwaukee. I've been at their arena. The Rockies are downtown in Colorado. Don't have to be necessarily downtown. You got to give reasons for people to go to a Royals game to not watch the Royals, if that makes any sense. Like, you want people to go out there and then, like, all right, I'm already here. I'm eating at this cool restaurant, or there's a Dave and Buster's. You know what? I might as well go to the game. I'm here. Do you know why the Royals created the kids zone out in the outfield? Because it didn't used to be there for you younger people. The Royals were horrible, and the idea was, we've got to find a way to get moms to bring their kids to the ballpark. And so they came up with the merry-go-round, the little K, the running sprint from home to first or whatever it is, the batting cages. They did that because their product was so bad, they had to come up with gimmicks. They had to come up with, give you reasons to come out and be entertained. And we don't even really care if you sit in your seat and cheer on the Royals. Just at least pay for the ticket to get through the turnstiles. And then if you want to hang out at the lemonade stand, you want to hang out if there's live music on a little stage out there that they have. If you want to, you know, watch your kids go up and down the merry-go-round all game long, fine. We just want you here. We don't even care if you cheer for us or not. We just need you to be here. That's why they built that stuff. And it's nice to have. You build a brand new stadium, you have way more than that stuff. At least you should. And you have a lot more around the stadium to eat, drink, hang out, do this, do that, live concerts, and whatever else. There's a lot of potential there, even if the Royals are bad. So when somebody says, well, why would you vote for a stadium and why would you pay money? Well, one, you might lose the Royals. They might go to another place. Look at the Oakland A's. They're going to Las Vegas and their fans aren't happy. Do you want the Royals to leave Kansas City? I don't. Now, I don't know if they have a somebody that's willing to take them on right away, but I'm guaranteed there are towns or cities in America that would like to have a Major League Baseball team that would step up to the plate and send the Royals to our town, right? And that's what Kansas City's trying to tell hockey teams. You know, hey, Arizona Coyotes, come to our town. You know, hey, NBA teams, come to our town. Well, it's no different if you're in you got a bigger city that would like to have a baseball team, if the Royals are available. So the Royals use that as leverage. So you pretty much have to build, you're going to have to build a ballpark at some point if you want to keep the Royals in Kansas City. And so you might as well build something good enough that's cool enough for a lot of people to enjoy themselves because of the product that isn't very good on the field. And lo and behold, if the product ever gets good again, now you got multiple reasons to go to the game besides watching Salvi pick up a Gatorade bucket and douse his teammate on the occasional time the Royals actually bleep and win. So I can deal with the losing. What I can't deal with is the incompetence. That's the part that drives me nuts. Virtually every organization in baseball has had a great season or two since the Royals won the World Series in 2015. The only one that hasn't is the Pirates. And the Pirates are having a pretty good year this year. How can the Baltimore Orioles go from 2 years ago losing over 100 games to now be one of the better teams in baseball? Why can't the Royals do that? They've made a ton of mistakes ever since they won the World Series. And as Randy Jazzurri may have said appropriately, the Royals sold their soul to the devil. They got, I joked about it at the time, everything that Dayton Moore touched turned to gold in 14 and 15. And in 2016, when he re-signed Alex Gordon, everything turned to poo. It was a complete opposite. It was almost like we made a deal with the devil. So if you're a Royals fan out there, God bless you. I love you. I'm a Royals fan. It hurts that the Royals are bad. But the thing that keeps me feeling to where I'm not really stressed out about it is that at least we, you know, it'd be horrible right now if we haven't had any playoff appearance since 85. And I remember how miserable I was in 2010 and 11 and 9 and so forth and so on when they were bad. And then the Royals had a 3-year window, basically 4 years of good baseball, 2 years of great baseball. Would I like to have that again? Absolutely. I'm 47. I at least have seen the Royals win a World Series twice. That's more than many organizations in baseball. And I've seen it in my lifetime. I've seen the Royals go to the World Series 3 times during my lifetime. They've been there 4 times in my 47 years on Earth. I just don't remember 1980. So the Royals actually are doing pretty well compared to a lot of organizations when it comes to World Series championships and World Series appearances. So I guess the question is, can you live with this another 10 years and then the Royals, when they do get good, they'll do what they did in 14 and 15 and win a championship and make a deep run back-to-back years and then have to fall apart again? And if that's the case, I'll sign up for it. If this is what we have to go through in order for the Royals to win another World Series, if you're going to guarantee me that the Royals are going to win another World Series before I die and that this is what I have to go through compared to, hey, Wade, we'll let the Royals be good 16 of the next 19 years, but they're not going to win it all. Sign me up. Sign me up for the championship again. Maybe my grandkid will be 9, because I was 9 when the Royals won the World Series in 85. My oldest was 9 when they won the World Series in 2015. And just maybe, if I become a grandparent, I'll have a 9-year-old that I can take to a Royals game in the playoffs and maybe a World Series game. And if that's going to happen every 29, 30 years, that means I get to see 3 titles. Hopefully I remember the first 2 and I'm 80 or 90 the next time it happens. That's pretty good, actually. So I guess you have to quantify your misery. The Royals are a small market team. They're not going to be good every year. No small market team really is, other than it seems like the Rays are the ones that can do it. And I understand Royals fans. It's frustrating, man. It's very frustrating. And for some of you out there, you probably already gave up and you don't even care about the Royals anymore. If that's the case, one, I would say you're not a true fan. Or two, you might be a true fan. You're just the indifference. You've just become indifferent. Doesn't mean you don't care. It just means that you're kind of like, eh, whatever. I can't get them on TV much anymore. It's hard to get them. That doesn't help the Royals either. The horrible TV deal they have is just absolutely junk. I mean, there's so many people that can't even get the Royals and watch the Royals. So that hasn't helped either. And that's caused some people and younger generation Royals fans to not be connected with the team or even know who the players are. So, you know, I miss those days of watching the Royals every night when they were good in 14 and 15. I miss being stressed out, pulling my hair out, whatever's left, when the Royals are, you know, down 2-1 against the Houston Astros and 6-2 in the eighth inning. I miss that. And I'd love to see it again. But at least I can say I've experienced it at least once in my lifetime. So thus, I may be a little bit more okay with this than somebody that did not witness or experience or get to enjoy 14 and 15. So, once again, I asked the question to close the show. Where's the progress? Like, what players on this team are going to be a part of the nucleus of the next Royals team that's going to be good? And odds are, the way I'm looking at it, and this must be the Debbie Downer moment of the show, the people that are probably going to be the core of the next Royals team that gets to the World Series might not even be born yet.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.